Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Rob Wolf, welcome to episode number 98 of Unformidable, where we take a look at some of the less heralded myths in our beloved franchise's quirky history, because to us, everyone who dons the orange and blue is in some way unformidable. The Mets recently played a series in Oakland, and will soon be on their way to Atlanta for a big series with the Braves in September of 2022 as we record this. And Howie Rose had mentioned something during the Mets-Oakland series, and it put me in mind of someone who played for only the Braves and the Mets in a career, sadly cut short by arm problems, but was a prominent figure and a controversial figure in a way at the time in the 1973 World Series, where the upstart Mets took on the dynastic Oakland A's, the unformidable George Stone. George Herd Stone Jr. was born on July 9th, 1946, in Ruston, Louisiana. Stone went to Ruston High School, which was primarily known as a football school back then. It produced multiple gridiron stars, including quarterback Burt Jones and future Pro Football Hall of Fame defensive end Fred Dean. But at Ruston, Stone, a great athlete, made his mark in basketball and baseball. In fact, while he starred with the bat and as a pitcher in high school baseball, it was really, in fact, in basketball where he flourished at the time, earning a basketball scholarship to play under legendary coach and former minor league baseball player Scotty Robertson at Louisiana Tech University, where Stone played alongside a future basketball Hall of Famer in Leon Barmore. But he didn't give up in baseball, continuing as a two-sport star, and it was baseball, of course, where his future would ultimately lie. In 1966, the lefty delivered a no-hitter en route to a 1.49 ERA, so it was perhaps not a surprise that he was drafted by the Braves in the fifth round of the 1966 amateur draft, making him the first ever player from Louisiana Tech drafted in the major leagues. Mature for his age, talented, but also with great control and pitching acumen, especially even for a young player, Stone excelled in the minors and moved through the system very quickly. He was the youngest player on his Class A team where he was assigned after being drafted, compiling an 8-2 record with a 2.25 ERA in 80 innings. averaging over a strikeout or inning and surrendering only 3 home runs in those 80 innings at the tender age of 19. Stone then impressed the Braves brass at spring training, and while he didn't earn a spot in the majors, he was put on the fast track and actually was called up in May of 67 when a pitcher went on the DL, though he didn't get any action before being returned to the minors. But he had another very strong minor league year, progressing through AA and AAA to get the proverbial late season September call-up. So he had turned 21 during the minor league season in July and made his major league debut at the age of 21 on September 15th of 1967. He would enter that game in the 8th inning with the Braves trailing 4-1, and it was not an ideal major league debut. He got his first batter, Billy Williams, to pop out, but he then surrendered a triple to Ron Santo, followed by 2 singles before getting pulled. The inherited runner scored, giving him a 1/3 of an inning, 3 earned run debut. He'd have to wait 2 weeks to get a second chance, proverbial second chance, second appearance on a major league mound on September 29th of 1967. This time he would get a start against the World Series-bound St. Louis Cardinals and would only be matched up against the great Bob Gibson in his starting debut in game 160 of the season. And while Stone took a no decision, he showed his guile and his guts and his talent and his ability to rise to an occasion, which he thought he could do later as a Met. Spoiler alert. Taking a no decision in a duel with Gibson where he went 7 innings, allowing 1 run, scattering 5 hits, 1 walk, and 5 strikeouts. To say a very successful major league starting debut for a 21-year-old, even if his team would go on to lose in the 10th inning. Stone would start 1968 in the minors, but come up pretty much for good in July of 1968, making 17 appearances over the second half of the season for Atlanta, including 10 starts. He'd earn the first win of his major league career in relief on July 26th of 1968. He came into a game with the Braves down 3-0 in the 7th inning, through 2 innings of 1-run ball, surrendering a home run to Don Locke of the Phillies, but the Braves would rally for 5 runs in the 8th and 9th innings, making a winning pitcher of Stone. It would be his second start of the year, though, on August the 7th of 1968, where Stone would get his first starting win of his major league career, going the distance, 9 innings, 6 hits, 2 earned, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts, and outdueling Ken Holtzman of the Cubs. Outdueling is a strong term since the Braves won 10-2. For good measure, though, Stone went 2-for-3 with a run scored and 3 RBIs in the game to contribute with the bat as well as the arm, as it were. As mentioned, I know a lot of players start as both hitters and pitchers in high school, but Stone remained a good hitter through his career. He hit .212 as a pitcher, .487 OPS, 1 homer and 39 RBIs over his career. Stone was, of course, 22 at the start of that season, turned 23 during the season, and looked good over the last 9 starts over the latter half of the season. The Braves had a lot of good young pitching at the time and considered gambling with the young player and with the expansion draft coming up, but ultimately chose to keep him, afraid that San Diego or Montreal would pounce on a young left-handed hurler in the expansion draft, as they believe made a lot more capable players available in the 69 expansion draft than they did in 62, unfortunately, for our beloved Mets. But Stone definitely had some promise. He had developed a reputation as someone with a sneaky fast fastball whose success stemmed from 2 different changeups and a slider, which made his fastball play up. Having a hard time thinking of a comp for Stone, although interestingly, looking at similarity scores on Baseball Reference, the most similar pitcher to Stone by age in the last couple of years of his career in 27 and 28 was Jonathan Neese, which is not a terrible comp, I don't think, for, I don't want to say skill level, but, you know, well, it's a similarity score, achievement level, comparability. The most similar pitchers to Stone in his career include some pitchers such as Atlee Hammaker and Alex Cobb are some who are high comparisons to Stone. You know, pitchers who are never going to be aces but can certainly flash at times. At any rate, by late April of 69, Stone had earned his way back into the Braves' rotation, and he would really vacillate between starting and relief throughout the 69 season for a team that was bound for the National League Western Division title. Stone would appear in 36 games over the season, making 20 starts, going 13-10 with a 3.65 ERA, 165 innings pitched, 102 strikeouts. Some of his highlights from that year included carrying a no-hitter into the seventh inning on June 14th against the Pirates, and hitting his only career home run, which happened to provide the winning runs in a 4-3 win on September 12th against the Astros. Stone would make only one appearance in the 1969 NLCS, that in Game 3. He came into a game that the Mets led 5-4 in the fifth inning with a man on second after a Cleon Jones double. Ken Boswell singled Jones home, although Stone would get out of the inning without further damage. But in the bottom of the sixth, he would give up a leadoff double to Jerry Grody, who would come around to score. Stone would get Harrelson out on a sacrifice bunt, but the run would go on Stone's ledger when Cecil Upshaw would come in and surrender an RBI single to Tommy Agee to make it 7-4. The Braves would get nothing more off of Nolan Ryan in his seven innings of stellar relief of Gary Gentry, as the Mets would complete the sweep of the inaugural NLCS 3-0 over the Braves at Shea. Stone would get one more crack at the playoffs in his major league career in 1973, this time as a Met. One crack too few, according to both he and some of his teammates. Stone would be pretty up and down for the Braves the next couple of years. In 1970, he would go 11-11. He would throw a career-high 207 innings and make a career-high 30 starts, 9 complete games, all career highs, as probably his second-best season of his career, aside from his really impressive 1973 with the Mets, but still a bit uneven, and definitely had a downturn in the second half, but he was still a young lefty, so Stone, which would happen multiple times over his career, I guess he must have been seen to have a lot of promise, though would often be offered in trades for players that turned out to have better careers. Of course, Stone did struggle with injuries, but at any rate, during that offseason of 70, the Braves reportedly were offered future Hall of Famer Don Sutton by the Dodgers for Stone, but turned it down, hoping the young lefty would develop further. 71 turned out a little like 70 for Stone, where he started off very strong, but started to have arm trouble in, later in the 71 season. In August, at one point he was among the league leaders in ERA with a 2.76 ERA, but struggled horribly with arm problems to end with a mediocre line, and of course now the dreaded thing for any pitcher being potential arm problems. 72 started off on a high note for Stone, as he had gotten married in the offseason, technically in December of 71. It's a high note personally, and he had an excellent spring training, but it didn't carry over into the season. He struggled both unusually for him with his control somewhat, and struggled just with his performance, going 6-11 in 1972 with a 5.51 ERA. He had never walked more than 2.2 batters per 9 innings, and that year he shot up to 3.6 batters per 9 innings. Perhaps the lingering arm problem still bothered him. But by now, Stone would be turning 26 before the 73 season, was having a number of arm problems, and the Braves, who had a lot of pitching problems that year in addition to Stone, decided in the offseason to try and bring in Gary Gentry and Danny Frisella from the Mets in exchange for Stone and all-star second baseman Felix Mian. This, of course, is one of the better trades in Mets history. Mian, you know, became quite the beloved Met, and at the time, many people reported Stone as a throw-in in the trade, but Yogi Berra and particularly his pitching coach, Rube Walker, reportedly were high on Stone. Yogi said that Walker believed he can change him a little, thinks he has good stuff, and he could make him a winner. And Stone would indeed be a winner at the New York Mets in 1973.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
The Mets were, of course, still known for their pitching in 73, led by Seaver and Kuzman and young John Matlack. But Stone would take his place as the fourth man in that rotation during the 73 season, and a key overachieving one at that. It was a pitching-driven team. Seaver, Kuzman, Matlack were the top three for the team in WAR. Wayne Garrett was next at 4.3. And then, again, the trade reaping immediate dividends, Felix Mian and George Stone, both good for 3.2 WAR, according to Baseball Reference, for the 73 Mets. Again, Stone probably looked more like a throw-in pitching depth to most at first. He did not start the season in the rotation, and in fact made 5 relief appearances, including getting a save before the game that would kind of turn his season around or make him a more prominent piece for the Mets. That coming on May 24th of 1973 at Dodger Stadium, when Stone would come in the 13th inning of a game that was tied, of course, at 3. And Stone would go on to hurl 6 scoreless innings. Charlie Huff, future Met pitching coach, would match him for 5 of those, but the Mets would ultimately touch up Doug Rao for 4 runs in the top of the 19th inning. Jim McAndrew would come on for the save. Stone, by the way, came on in relief of Tug McGraw, who had thrown 5 scoreless innings. So impressive bullpen work, as it were. That would be Stone's first win as a Met, and it would thrust him more into the radar, and he would soon get a crack at the starting rotation, and he would not look back that season. His first 2 starts were losses, 2 quality starts. Again, it was not an offensive juggernaut of a team. He would make his first start as a Met at San Diego against the Padres, going 6 innings, giving up 3 runs on 5 hits, but losing 3-0. The next start would be at home against the Giants, where he would go 6 innings and surrender 2 runs and fall to 1-2 on the season. From that point on, Stone would go 12-1 as a starter for the Mets. His first win as a starter on June 17th of 1973 against the Padres, he would take a 3-1 decision over the Padres, going 7 1/3 innings, surrendering 4 hits and 4 walks and 5 strikeouts, and earning his second win of the year. Again, he would just take off from there. After that, he would win 8 decisions in a row from August through the end of the regular season, during which he would hurl 3 complete games and pitch into the 8th inning or beyond 7 times in total. On July 14th, in a preview of what will become that season's NLCS, Stone would outduel Don Gullett and the Reds. The Mets would win 5-2 in Riverfront Stadium against the young baby Big Red Machine in front of 36,166. You wouldn't have known it would be an NLCS preview, given that it raised the Mets' 1973 record to a mere 38-48. But of course, the NL East would be quite the quagmire that season. Striking out 7 over 8 strong innings in Cincinnati against that offense, one of the more impressive starts of just an incredibly impressive stretch for Stone. In an NL East that was decided by a razor-thin margin, Stone was a huge piece as he went 4-0 over five starts in the month of September as the Mets went 20-8 to eke out a division title with their 82-79 record. While his best pitched games in that stretch were probably his first two starts in September, September 1st against the Cardinals, where he went 7 innings, striking out 8 in a 4-1 victory, or September 9th, where he held the Montreal Expos scoreless over 7 2/3 innings, scattering 11 hits in a 3-1 victory for the Mets. Most likely the most crucial victory was September 19th at Pittsburgh, where the Mets would pull within a game and a half of the first-place Pirates. The Pirates had dropped to 75-74 with the loss. The Mets were 75-77 as Stone outdueled Nelson Bryles, and the Mets defeated the Pirates 7-3 at Shea. Pardon me, I thought that game was on the road, but it was at Shea. But take over first place and make the playoffs, the Mets would, with that 82-79 record, and would go into the NLCS as huge underdogs to the Big Red Machine. And things didn't look much better when Tom Seaver lost Game 1 to the Reds 2-1, but the Mets would bounce back behind a John Matlack shutout in Game 2, and Jerry Kuzman would throw a great game in Game 3, which was, of course, marked the first game at Shea in the series, and, of course, was marked by the brawl between Buddy Harrelson and Pete Rose. So it was a feisty, combative Game 4 of the NLCS where the Mets had a chance to close it out against the Reds. Stone got the start against Fred Norman, although Don Gullett would again oppose him, coming in to pitch 4 innings of scoreless relief. Stone would be excellent against the Reds, going 6 2/3 innings, allowing 3 hits and only 1 run, 2 walks and 4 strikeouts. Tug McGraw would provide 4 1/3 innings of scoreless relief thereafter, but ultimately, the Mets would lose in 12, Harry Parker taking the loss. But Stone had acquitted himself incredibly well and continued his excellent pitching and proved that he belonged in a rotation in the playoffs, or so it seemed. Seaver would pitch the Mets to victory in Game 5, making them one of the more unlikely World Series participants in memory. They would take on the Oakland A's dynasty in what seemed to be an incredible mismatch. But perhaps fatefully, Yogi would pitch Stone out of the bullpen in what turned out to be a tense, taut, 7-game World Series. Mets would stick with Seaver, Kuzman, and Matlack to start, and Stone would pitch out of the bullpen, getting 2 appearances and pitching well, but fatefully not starting Game 6 when he was originally slated to. After the A's took Game 1 2-1 with John Matlack getting outdueled by Ken Holtzman, the Mets and the A's split 2 extra inning games in Game 2 in Oakland and Game 3 at Shea. The Mets evened the series in Game 4 6-1, again behind Matlack. And then in Game 5, Kuzman would fire a shutout against the A's, 6 1/3 shutout innings. McGraw pitched the last 2 1/3. The Mets left Shea 3-2 ahead of the heavily favored A's. So the Mets had a 3-2 advantage. Stone was originally slated as the Game 6 starter, but Yogi Berra clearly was considering starting Tom Seaver in Game 3 on 3 days rest in Game 6, thinking he would then have John Matlack to start on 3 days rest in Game 7 if it came to a Game 7. Stone strongly believed he should have started, should have had a shot at starting. He was, as he noted, he was a hot pitcher down the stretch, and he strongly believed he was the kind of pitcher who gave a team like Oakland trouble, as the A's were notorious free swingers, and Stone was a control, finesse pitcher, you know, who believed he could outsmart them, junk ball them, you know, basically Harris from Major League to death, I guess. According to legend, not only did Stone think he should start the game, but many Mets did as well. Supposedly Rusty Staub, Cleon Jones, and some others went to Berra suggesting that they thought Stone should start. That then the Mets would have not only Seaver on full rest, but Kuzman and Matlack out of the bullpen in a Game 7. But it was to no avail, and probably one of the great what-ifs in Mets history. Seaver got outdueled by Catfish Hunter 3-1 in Game 6. Seaver surrendered 2 in 7 innings. Tug McGraw surrendered the last run. Then Matlack really didn't have it on short rest the next day, putting the Mets in an early 4-0 hole they would not recover from, where they would lose the game 5-2 and lose the series in a tight, sad, unfortunate 7 games. That'll insult to injury. Stone pitched 2 excellent innings in Game 7, striking out the side in the bottom of the 7th after allowing a pair of singles and then pitching a scoreless 8th, though the Mets would only get one run closer than 5-1, losing 5-2, as noted. On the whole, Stone continued his excellence from 73 into the playoffs, throwing 9 2/3 innings for the Mets in the 73 playoffs, surrendering 7 hits, walking 3, striking out 7. But it's those innings that he didn't pitch that many Mets fans of a certain generation will always wonder about. Stone's other appearance in the World Series, I should be noted here and to save in Game 3 of that World Series, which was a wild 12-inning game. The A's tied in the bottom of the 9th. Tug McGraw threw 6 innings of relief. The Mets scored 4 in the top of the 12th, and when the A's threatened in the bottom of the 12th, off of a surely exhausted McGraw, who surrendered a triple to Reggie Jackson and walked Gene Tennis, Stone came in and gutted his way out of that bottom of the 12th, allowing one inherited run to score, but closing it out for the victory. So you can see, perhaps, why Stone was held in high regard by the Mets after that 73 season. Once again, Stone was a hot commodity on the trade market. The Mets were reportedly offered Joe Torre, Jim Wynn, and Paul Blair in separate trades, obviously, for Stone during that offseason. The Mets, as noted, were entirely built on pitching and had a pretty weak offense. Mets GM Bob Scheffing faithfully said, "We won with pitching. I'm not going to break up this pitching staff." Can certainly understand the sentiment, but unfortunately, Stone's arm problems recurred and would really short-circuit his career. He would pitch in 74 and 75 for the Mets, making only 15 and 13 appearances in those seasons and having an ERA over 5 in each season. Stone was having problems with his rotator cuff, and, you know, in an era where never good for a pitcher, but an era where that was potentially career-threatening, and in this case, sadly, it was. In spring training of 76, the Mets traded Stone to the Texas Rangers, but Stone opted to retire rather than continue throwing his last major league pitch before he reached the age of 30. For his career, Stone went 60-57, with a 3.89 ERA, 203 games, 145 games started, through 1,020 and 2/3 major league innings, walking 270, striking out 590. He recorded 5 career shutouts, 24 complete games, 5 shutouts, and 5 career saves. And then, of course, one more save in the playoffs. As a Met, Stone went 17-13 with a 3.86 ERA, over 282 innings pitched, pardon me. And of course, those additional 9 2/3 innings in the playoffs. He returned to northern Louisiana in his retirement with his wife. They had 2 children and 4 grandchildren. And Stone became both a teacher and a coach in his retirement. In 2013, he was inducted into the Louisiana Tech Athletic Hall of Fame, and he'll always be remembered fondly as a Met for an amazing season and an amazingly frustrating what-if. An interesting, memorable career. One interesting footnote I saw is that Stone is one of 3 big leaguers who was able to call both Willie Mays and Hank Aaron a teammate. Aaron, obviously, in 69 with the Braves, and Mays in 73 with the Mets. Truly an unformidable career. Thanks for taking the time to listen to Unformidable. Please go to AmazingAvenue.com for more Mets-related content. Follow Amazing Avenue on all your socials, and look for this and all of our amazing pods wherever you get your podcasts. Original music by Bunga. I'm on Twitter at WolfRR, and the show is at Unformettable. Thank you, and as always, let's go Mets. Thank you.